Hello everyone and welcome to Don't Ignore the Elephant, the podcast where we talk about the stuff that no one else will, the elephant in the room. I'm Liz O'Riordan. I'm a breast cancer surgeon with breast cancer myself, and during my career I've had a lot of elephants to deal with. I've learned that talking about them, getting them out in the open, can help you know that you're not alone. And it's wonderful that we're building a community of people who want to talk about their elephants. Keep sharing them with me, because together we can help each other. Whether it's cancer, grief, resilience or bullying, losing your identity, or simply how to get out of bed in the morning, there are loads of things that can be hard to discuss. I know how powerful it can be to hear someone else talk honestly about their own problems. I've carefully chosen my guests to help get these issues on the table. They've either experienced the elephant themselves or spent their life helping those of us who have them. I'm going to be asking the questions everyone else is too afraid to ask. This week's guest has shown us all how to be a powerhouse on social media. When the shit literally keeps coming, she fights back with humour and wit. She's a lifeguard, a sports fan, and I hear she's got a thing for sweary colouring books. Oh yes, and she's also married to some MP. Welcome, Felicity, to Don't Ignore the Elephant.
Thank you.
I wanted to start talking, though, about swimming. What made you decide to be a lifeguard?
Honestly, Liz, because I was a terrible swimmer, which didn't matter in my life at all. I mean, I can swim. But then when you find that your eldest daughter's decided she's going to be some kind of crazy performance swimmer, it thrown swimming into sharp relief of how embarrassing it is. And it was a couple of years ago, and in my household, we do talk about New Year's resolutions. They don't usually manifest themselves in anything in reality, but we do talk about them. And I said, yeah, this year, what shall I do? And my daughter said to me, you need to be less of an embarrassing swimmer. And she had an excellent point, because also the other reason is I, as a swim mum, and I'm sure there's tons of you out there and dads, you spend a lot of time hanging around outside the pool.
Yeah, my parents did.
Absolutely. And your choice is either to eat everything in the vending machine in one sitting.
Yes.
Or actually do something useful, because there's never any Wi-Fi. You can never get any work done. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to start training properly in my swimming and actually aim for something. And we came up with the lifeguard idea, because then I can lifeguard at her pool and I can cheekily watch her do a bit of swimming. So then I properly started to train and signed up for the course. By about April, I thought, I don't know, maybe I can do this. I found the nearest centre that was doing it and phoned up, and this lovely chap called Ben answered. And I said, look, expectation management, I'm a rubbish swimmer. And he said, well, expectation management, I've never had anyone fail. I was like, do you want me to come back in a few months? And he said, no, absolutely not. Everyone's a challenge and you'll be absolutely fine. So he talked me into it, not delaying. He said, let's go for it. And, he was brilliant. And the course was brilliant. And now I get to, work as a lifeguard, which I really enjoy.
I love that.
Yeah. And if you don't use it, it sort of falls by the wayside. So you have to keep using it. And I thought, well, I've got a skill now. Let's get on with it.
And you're no longer that swim mum with a stopwatch eating all the stuff from the vending machine.
Exactly. There's some crisps left in the vending machine.
Now, some of my listeners might not know who you are or who your husband is. And I think it's important to know that background so we can work out what you do online. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Of course. So my husband, Johnny, who I am clearly biased, but I think is the best person in the world. He was a soldier for 14 years in Plymouth, and he is now the Member of Parliament for Plymouth Moorview, which he started in 2015. On a complete whim, I hasten to add, we had absolutely zero idea of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Thought we would just go for it, because he wanted to change the way that veterans were looked after in this country. So he went for it, and he had a less than 1% chance of winning that seat, and he won it in 2015.
Wow.
Which was quite amazing. And then he fought and fought and fought for the next 7 years to get an Office of Veterans Affairs set up that was out of the MOD, so that there was no conflict with the Ministry of Defence, similar to what they do in America and Canada and Australia. And he finally got there. So he's also now the Veterans Minister attending Cabinet, and he gets on with it. And I'm for my sins, his wife. who never used to be on social media, I hasten to add.
So I want to talk about that. So I didn't do Twitter, my husband did. He's a surgeon, he got in his news, and I only tweeted a bit about baking and triathlons. And when I got breast cancer, I started blogging, right. And I got followers. Yeah. And the day I had more followers than my husband, he got really pissed off, and he's now the husband of the more famous wife. What got you started in Twitter?
Well, funny story, a nappy of shit actually got me started on Twitter. And this is a true story. So fun. So I was off social media when he started in 2015 because the abuse in politics, even early on, and it's only got worse, but even early on it was bad. So I thought, let's stay away from it all. Stay away from Twitter. Nobody knows me. Nobody knows the children. They'll just be flinging abuse at Johnny. So that, you know, we trundled on for 7 years like that. And then one day, just as we were coming out of COVID, I opened a package in my kitchen from a sender I didn't know, and it was a nappy full of human feces.
Addressed
to me. Yes, addressed to me. Yes.
Shit.
I know, exactly. Yeah, and that was a surprise, I'll be honest. It was a surprise, amongst other things. We were all at home, but the girls were all upstairs, and they didn't see, thank goodness. But Johnny sort of grabbed it off me, ran outside and put it on the... you know, on the grass, you know, because obviously it was also in a pandemic and it was bodily fluid, so it was but the police were great.
Jesus.
and they narrowed it down, you know, they did some digging and they narrowed it down to a woman in a Croydon post office. They had CCTV of her, but she was wearing a baseball cap, and that surprised me. It always takes me by surprise is that it was a woman. Like a lot of the misogyny I get on Twitter is from women, which always surprises me. And I thought, well, actually, if I've been off social media and I still get to hold someone else's poo in my hands in my own kitchen, why am I hiding? What's the point? It's going to find me. It's going to find me. So I thought, nope, I'm taking control. Taking back control. Sorry, there was a Brexit reference there.
No, don't mention the B
word. I'm not even going there. I love Europe. I'm just putting that out there. So I just thought, no, you know what? I'm just going to go on social media and do my thing. And then it sort of evolved organically. Really, I didn't have much of a plan. I didn't even think it was something that I was particularly good at. I thought I was just going to put pictures of my children on there, like everyone else, or cats or something.
Yeah.
But what I actually found was my best material was when I put in Johnny's name and do a search.
Right.
You get all these really ripe and crunchy jokes about him. That, well, they're not jokes. They're people thinking they're being, you know, really
funny
and funny. But it's not funny until I then own it and switch it around. Then it's funny.
Yeah.
But I didn't even think that would be funny. I just thought, well, that's going to make me feel better. And then suddenly people started finding it funny. Yeah. Saying, oh, you're like James Blunt. And I was like, oh, I need to look up James Blunt. What does he do? And then it sort of snowballs. And now I've just tipped 20,000 followers. I'll never get as many as Johnny, but that's fine. You know, like you said, it's the sort of the balance in your marriage is at stake there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I read your tweets and they make me laugh. And just this week, someone had said, fuck Johnny Mercer, and you went sideways. I love this. Wow.
Thank you.
I love that you're so open about your sex life with your husband on Twitter.
Yeah, that helps. That would be awkward if we never had sex. Yeah, I wouldn't have anything to say.
Do the responses come instantly, or do you think this will be really, really funny? Are you a natural comedian, or are you trying to?
So that is what, if someone had said that to my face, that is what falls out of my mouth straight away.
Got you.
Yeah.
It just comes out. Yeah.
It just comes out. But what I do is I will write it and then I will put it in my drafts. Because I don't send anything, something like that, I will send pretty much straight away. Unless people are particularly prudish, it's not particularly offensive. If it's one that can cause offence or controversy or goes a little bit close to the wire, you know, like some of the ones where I've tweeted about Johnny, for example, or his job, or his fun and interesting colleagues, then I might put it in his in drafts and then just sort of sit on it for a bit, just to make absolutely sure that I'm not going to tweet something and then start sweating about whether I've done the right thing.
Because I've done that. So many times I'm tempted to fire off an angry tweet at someone who's upset me or said something that's just wrong. And I always regret it.
Yeah.
I need to learn how not to engage and how to respond. And it's a really hard lesson, the mistakes I've made. And you forget you are arguing with people online in public.
Absolutely. And there's that saying, isn't it? Never try and argue with an idiot. Because you're not going to win.
Yeah.
They keep coming back. Yeah, so my rule is, it is very helpful, because often I've had something in drafts and I've gone back to it and gone, no, do you know what, I just look petty, or I look silly or
yeah,
it doesn't do anyone any favours, or it's not even worth sending. And then you've calmed down by then anyway.
Yeah.
And the contentious ones, this is what makes me laugh, because people are like, some people who don't really understand what I'm doing, like, oh, you've just ruined your husband's career, or you know, and it's really dramatic stuff. And the funny thing is that if there is a contentious one, I will always run it past Johnny first. I will never tweet anything that he hasn't just gone, yeah, that's really funny, send it.
Yeah.
But then a lot of people still don't understand that, because they think that he's a politician and he's not allowed to swear or have a sense of humour or be fun.
And how dare his wife think she knows what she's doing and say this about him.
Yeah.
It's like, oh God, you don't know what you're doing. And it's...
You're not the MP. Shut the fuck up. I get a lot.
Yeah, no one cares what you think. How do we get more women to be more like you, to be more self-deprecating and to fight stuff back with humour and actually say, yeah, you want to come for me? I'll come back at you. How do we encourage?
Well, I'm hoping that by doing what I'm doing, it does automatically lead to people being encouraged. That, you know, the sky doesn't fall in.
No.
And it is fun. And I am not forcing people to read it, and they can leave whenever they like. I think I can only do it by example. I can just try and lead from the front. And what's interesting is also, I could also encourage women to then look at the comments, because even then, what then happens, and then I'm not even in control, is that in the comments, if someone then says an awful comment to me, what you'll find is all of my followers will suddenly pile in and defend me. So you actually have a huge amount of protection from all the people you care about. And they're the only ones that you care about anyway. Because they're the ones that are following you, and they follow you because they like what you've got to say. So
yeah,
I think if you look at it that way, it can help people out, because I think it's a way of just saying, look, if you're going to get abuse, you know, please try not to take it too personally. Make a joke of it.
Yeah.
Or ignore it. It's, you know, it is a cesspit. It really is.
You know, I've learned that by just my followers will defend me, but I've kind of been on the flip side. So there was one influencer, I couldn't bite my tongue anymore. I had women messaging me in tears. Is this true? This is crazy. She's saying mammograms kill people. I have to say something.
Oh.
And she sent all her followers after me. And the death threats I had on Instagram, you vile, filthy, see you next Tuesday. You should rot in hell. You should die. It was horrible.
Awful.
And it's sickening to read it, but you can't stop. It's like this weird, twisted thing. And you can switch it. You can't spend your life blocking everybody. And it is so hard just to... I think I'm never going to do this again. I'm never going to do. And then someone will say something stupid. I think I just, from that public health point of view, how do you cope when you get the really nasty stuff? Can you just block it out and forget about it?
The funny thing is, I'm a bit backward on Twitter, because I tend not to block people, because those are the people I'm getting my best material from. So I'm using them as a resource. And actually, I'm kind of a victim of my own success, because since I've been cruising around the waters of Twitter, you know, looking for the small fish to eat. They've actually gone down in numbers. You know, more fish in the Twitter sea, because now they've gone, oh, actually, if I say something about Johnny Mercer, I'm going to get his wife. So a lot of people have stopped doing it. So yes.
Right. So we need to make more people be rude about Johnny to give you more material.
Yeah, so
if you're out there listening.
Bring it on. It's all a bit backwards. So really, I've kind of served my purpose. I've been on there for 18 months now. And I've sort of I've served the purpose. I think I've done what I've sort of set out to do. But I'm happy to carry on doing it, for as long as people think Johnny's a wanker, then bring it on.
And do you tell Johnny to keep on being a wanker so he gets more insults thrown at him? Or,
Of course. He's happy to tick that box.
Now, the world of politics does seem to be really angry at the moment. And almost every MP is tarred by the same brush. Do you think it's hard to be a politician at the moment? I mean, you've seen the abuse that he gets, and how can we make it safer and a friendlier job for people to apply for?
Yes, I think it's a very, very difficult job. And I think, I mean, when we started in 2015, it was difficult, and it's even worse now. You know, we've been through the contentiousness of Brexit. I can't believe I've mentioned it again. I apologise.
I know, I will cut that.
I could. We've been through contentious leadership. You know, we've been through pandemic, we've been through so much.
You've had Joe Cox and David Amies.
We've had two horrendous murders. So the landscape, I think, has really changed. It would be interesting, you know, to talk to a sort of a 25-year MP to say, you know, what the difference is. But obviously, I've only got the last 9 years to compare. It definitely has got worse. My metric is that at the very beginning, people would say to me, oh, Felicity, I'm thinking about going into politics. What do you think? And I'd say to them, absolutely, we need good people like you. Yeah, join up, go for it. You know, it doesn't matter what party, just go for it. Now, unless I particularly detested that person, I'd be like, don't do it. No, don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It is a thankless job. The thing is, you can't even moan about it, because if I moan about it, I just sound ungrateful. And so I'm not going to moan about it, because it is also a privilege. You know, Johnny represents Plymouth, which is an amazing city, and it's a privilege. It's such a weird job. Everybody has their own
roles.
And you can't win, whatever you do.
I mean, I know of female MPs who no longer put their faces on campaign posters, so their daughters don't see what people do to their faces.
Oh yes. I mean, I remember driving around on the outskirts of Plymouth and phoning MPs' offices saying, you know, this is what's on the board over here and here and here. So Johnny and I, we have a little, we look like serial killers, but if you go into our garage, we have got all of the campaign posters for Plymouth that were defaced, because we just love
them.
They're really good mementos. So, you know, you've got Johnny Mercer is a wanker, Johnny Mercer is a twat. And our favourite, we thought, gosh, because this person stood there with their Sharpie working this out. We thought, vote Johnny Mercer to make things worse.
Clever.
Isn't it clever?
Yes. Like, oh, see where they went with that one.
We like that one. So that one is quite a place in the garage. So yeah, we've now got a collage and we've cut out all the best ones in the garage. So again, we take everything bad and make it into something that me and the children and Johnny just laugh about, because I think that's just, maybe it's the military in us that's rubbed off Johnny, but you know, we find that that is the best way.
You have to somehow see the funny side, don't you? And
absolutely.
I know a lot of doctors who've been scared to go on Twitter. They're scared of patients stalking them or being, is it trolled or trolled? I never know how to say that word.
Was that two different words?
Troll or troll? I don't know.
Troll.
Anyway, troll, I think. It doesn't happen to everybody. And when it does, it's only a tiny part of your interaction.
Yes.
And Twitter can be an incredible force for good. You can make some massive changes on there.
Of course. There is really positive things I've seen on Twitter. There's support network groups. There's people looking out for each other. You know, every now and then you see someone in your sort of following that you haven't heard from for a while. And people check in. Well, I haven't heard from you. Are you okay? And then you realise that they might have been through something or something's happened. So although a lot of people never even meet, there is a sort of a support there. And there is good to be done. And it is a good way of, you know, especially in politics, getting a message out there. It's whether the bad outweighs the good. And in terms of a parent, I do worry because I think when it comes to my own children, I think, well, does the bad outweigh the good? And therefore, should it be more regulated? And, you know, even one teenager that takes their own life is too much.
I know. I am so grateful I grew up without social media. Absolutely. I was bullied enough at school, but the thought of having Facebook or Snapchat and having it 24/7, I don't know what I'd have done.
And documented as well. I mean, at every stage that we were growing up, and we made tons of mistakes, we were so lucky that we didn't have any of it documented in the 80s and 90s. And now, everything, you can't make a mistake without everybody knowing about it.
No.
And mistakes were part of growing up, so how's that going to work? I'm old school. I mean, I'm happy with a piece of pen, a paper and an abacus. You know, I would be happy if this stuff didn't really exist. Go back to booking flights on teletext.
Yes.
Yeah, the good old days.
We spend our lives on our phones, don't we? Mm. Do you think the online abuse bill will actually achieve anything?
It is heartbreaking. And Johnny's met with a few of the dads of teenagers that have taken their own lives, and all we can do is be hopeful. We'd be hopeful that all this time and effort and resources that goes into these bills and legislation, that it will actually do something. But it all comes down to money, doesn't it? It's like everything in this world. If there's something in it for us or them, or
I know.
You know, is it really going to change? Because we want, you know, their tax dollars, so are we going to put enough?
I know. I just wish we could make things like this cross-party, stop it being a political thing and making it being a good for the country thing.
Well, that's the interesting question. I mean, politics would only work if it wasn't politics anymore. If everyone was on the same side, and then it would work. I especially think that with local politics and local governance, is that, you know, a city like ours is completely divided because it all comes to politics. Well, we're all in the same city, so how does that work? It should all be on the same page.
I know.
The whole system, and this is what I've said for a long time, you know, when you're upset with your politician, just take a step back, because there are not many people that actually really understand how it works. I mean, you have to work in it to really get it. I don't mean to sound patronising. Yeah. That's not what I mean. I mean, it's just the nuance of how the system works. It is very difficult to get your head around, because you can't, most normal people would think, no, it's not that bad. No, it is that bad. And it's a very broken system that relies very much on coercion, tit for tat. You know, it's not built on a foundation of love and butterflies, unfortunately.
No.
And therefore, I always say to people, if you are really cross with your MP, just take a step back. Take a step back and just think about the parameters that are having to act within and the pressures that they are coming under. If they are waiting for money for a new hospital or a new school, they can't go against the whips in any possible way, because the first thing they'll do is that funding will go.
Exactly. So their hands are tied.
Absolutely. They're walking a very tight line. So the abuse towards politicians on most cases is very unfounded, and it's just because it's a channel for anger, but it doesn't mean that it's actually placed in the right direction. Unfortunately, it's the system. The system is dreadful, but you know, that's me on my soapbox.
No, I like the soapbox. I think we need to change it. People were so eager to. Where's all this anger come from? Oh. Is it just a voice that anyone can say anything without anyone telling us off?
I don't know whether I. A lot of it is that. I mean, you know, the whole sort of argument about a keyboard warrior, you know, I mean, I see it in Plymouth. People are very brave online. And then as soon as they see Johnny Mercer in the street, they're like, oh, Johnny, oh, how are you? And it's hilarious. You know, it's really funny. But even, you know, people that, you know of a different colour, it's suddenly actually, when you meet somebody, it doesn't matter what their politics are. You know, you judge a person, you're like, gee, I really like you because you're cool.
Yeah.
So I think this hatred thing, I think in a way it's easier if you see Twitter as somewhere that's just not, it's not real life. It's not real.
No.
It's like everyone who's on Twitter has turned into a toddler. So it's extreme.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they're all full of love or full of hate. There's no sort of neutral stability in the middle. It's very extreme. And it's just like my toddler is right now, who's just coming up for three. And that's her way. I know, she's lovely, but jeepers.
What's she called?
Audrey.
Oh.
She's a little dot. She's lovely, but she, honestly, I mean, they went to Portugal last year and pretty much had her in a headlock all the way because she was so badly behaved.
Did you see Johnny Mercer's wife headlocking their toddler, Charles Cora?
I know. Let's see that on the Daily Mail. But you know what I mean? We had to sort of try and put her in her seat. I was trying to hug her and like, yeah, let's watch Cinderella. But all she wanted to do was run up and down. She found a stash of someone's Chubba Chub lollies under their chair. So she was actually running down the plane, sit under their chair and see the lollies.
Really, I love this.
Unacceptable behaviour. But what do you do when you're in a small space and you know that if you just say no, she's going to just kick off.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, you get yourself into some really interesting situations. And we've all been there. Twitter is full of toddlers, so almost like you're treading on eggshells because you don't know when the next toddler is suddenly going to kick off. There are some lovely people on Twitter, of course they are, but most of the cesspit, you just think it's not real. And when they see you in real life, they wouldn't be anywhere near as awful.
And I think the toddler thing is great when you get idiots telling you are whatever they think they are. If you imagine you're applying as an adult to a child and you just tell them off.
Yes, exactly. And I think if you're firm and fair, fair, offer them an ice cream, you'll be fine.
I know. But I want to talk about working with your husband, because I spent 6 months after I was married as a junior doctor on call with my husband, and the phone would go at 2 a.m. and he could hear what I was being told. And it was so easy just to pass the phone on to him and say, you're the boss, you answer it. I don't want to get out of bed. And no one knew how to treat us in the hospital, you know, and do I kiss and say hello when he's the boss?
Yeah.
What's it like working with or for your husband? And would you recommend that more couples do it?
It's a great question. I thoroughly enjoy working with Johnny, but then he's my best mate. You know, we have that relationship. And I know that not everyone does. You know, I'm not easily annoyed by him. Whereas I know some couples, you know, you get to, you spend too much time in each other's company and you can start to, you know, why are you breathing so loudly? luckily, we haven't got there yet. We may get there one day, but we're not there yet. We enjoy spending time together. And I think when he was in the military, there wasn't apart from being a supportive spouse, there wasn't, I couldn't really get involved, you know, that it wasn't appropriate. So
was he away for long periods of time?
Oh yes, yeah. I mean, you know, the Afghan tours, and I mean, it was really tough. It was a tough gig. And military families are amazing, and people don't realise how amazing they are. So when he went into politics, and he did literally come home one day, slam the fridge, and go, "I'm going to leave the military, and I'm going to fix veterans care. I'm going to become a politician." And it was almost like,
"Wow, okay."
Okay, let me just sit down a minute. Let me think about what you're actually saying. I was like, well, we don't know anything about politics. Never mind, Felicity, we'll be fine.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, our ignorance is what got us across the line. I think if we realise what we're trying to do, someone had said to me years afterwards when we got in, someone did say, do you know the average time for someone becoming an MP is, I think it was over a decade.
And we did. Really?
We did the whole thing in about 12 months. I mean, it just wasn't supposed to happen, or maybe it just was supposed to happen. Yeah, so we decided it was something we could do together. And this was before they brought in the rule in 2017 that husbands and wives in Parliament now can't employ a spouse or a family member.
Right.
Or anyone that's sort of related to you through blood. But because I had my job with Johnny from 2015, I'm allowed to stay. But we made the decision that we were going to campaign together. We were going to do this together. We complement each other very well. We have very different skill sets.
Yeah.
The idea of him as a soldier having to sell himself. So he's coming out of an institution where you are part of a team. You know, the team is all about the team. And now he's going to have to go out there as an individual and sell himself. I mean, that's
really hard.
Terrifying for him. Whereas I will literally talk to anybody at any time, anywhere.
Yeah.
So I was the one that dragged him out and said, right, knock on that door and just say, hi, I'm Johnny, and just see what happens. Well, I can't, oh no, but what am I going to say for this? I'm like, come on, man up, do it, you'll be fine.
Should you have been the MP instead of him?
No. Do you know what? A lot of people ask me that. And for me, he's a lot calmer. I'm really hot-headed. As you can see on Twitter, I react quite quickly. He's much more measured than me. We have a different skill set. I think if I was an MP, it'd be hilarious, but I'm not sure whether that's really what you're crying out for now. maybe they want stable and competent, whereas I'd be unpredictable. And
you definitely shake the boat a bit. But now then, what stops you running away with Anthony Joshua?
Well, I've never met him, so I guess that's the biggest trouble. I mean, if I had.
We need to make this happen.
Yes, obviously I had to be proposing as soon as I saw the poor man.
When did the obsession start?
I think it was from the Olympics when he first won and sort of first came on the scene. And I just remember listening to him talk after his interview.
So he's a boxer for anyone listening who doesn't know what he is. He's a boxer, isn't he?
You can't miss him. He's a man mountain. And I think it wasn't so much the boxing, it was when he was talking afterwards and I just thought, what a brilliant ambassador for the sport, because it's a difficult sport for people to really love. For the masses. I mean, it's quite niche. You know, some people are like, oh, yeah, we're going to each other. I couldn't watch that. He was just, for me, just the first person that I just thought, what a brilliant ambassador. And I know there's been tons before, so I apologise to any other boxers that came before him. But he just seemed, for me, just great ambassador. Love him. And the fact that, you know, I mean, he keeps himself looking good. That helps, doesn't it?
All those
rippling muscles. I just love his smile. And he's got a lovely face. I just think he's lovely. I think he's lovely. So I should probably never meet him, because they say you should never meet your hero, shouldn't they?
No, does Johnny understand your obsession?
Completely understands. Yeah, I think he'd love good. Him as well. Yeah.
Okay. There'd be an interesting threesome.
Yeah, well, he's not shy of a good bromance or a boy crush.
Here's a question. I know that you and Johnny have been hunted on TV. Do you think MPs should go on reality TV? And can you serve the country whilst providing high-value entertainment and still be taken seriously?
Okay. Oh, that's quite multi-layered. Right.
Sorry. I hate those questions myself. Should MPs go on reality TV? Let's start with that.
Oh, it's such a contentious question.
I know.
I do have quite mixed feelings about it, if I'm totally honest.
In light of an ex-health minister, we can talk about it.
Yes, exactly. So the first thing I think of, I'm almost passing the baton, is what they're actually going to do. So for me, there's a huge difference between humiliating yourself on TV because you're absolutely starving and you need to get food for your camp and therefore eat some flipping testicle. I mean, I personally think that shouldn't be allowed. And I don't even find it particularly interesting viewing. I just feel incredibly sorry for them.
there's one program that I would all out say that I just don't see the benefit of.
Yeah.
You know, you're on the other side of the world. You're not representing your constituency. You've clearly taken time out of work. And the same applies to Johnny when he went on Hunted. He had to take 2 weeks out of work.
Yeah.
But we also did our absolute best to make sure that we combined that with what was going on at the time and made it part of the program. Because a lot of people are very fascinated with how it works. But there are very strict filming rules in the house, incredibly strict. So the speaker was absolutely brilliant because we have to get permission from the speaker. So it was always going to be, we're going to tie in the vote, the Brexit vote, because that was the sort of the big vote at the time. And crucially, the crucial point was that it was for charity and it was raising money for cancer.
Yeah, it was stand up to cancer, was it?
Stand up to cancer for Channel 4. So it wasn't, I'm going to earn tons of money for myself. It was for cancer. And also Johnny thought, do you know what, if I'm going to do a reality TV show, at least go for one where it kind of plays to my own skill set. So it might be fun for other people to watch. So we thought about it that way round. Would it be fun for people to watch? And we thought, do you know what, with his old skill set, it would be interesting to see if he could actually do it. It would be great to get some footage in the house, which we did. And also the girls could be a part of it as well. They had such fun. Obviously, you know, you spend your whole life telling your children not to lie, and then you get to that tricky point where you're like, right, you're not supposed to lie, but you can because it's for charity right now. So in the next 2 weeks, you're going to have to lie about where daddy is. So I have mixed feelings. I think it needs to be really well thought out.
Yeah.
I think going to the jungle probably serves no purpose except possibly you want to get back into a space where maybe you're in other people's good books because you've made it entertaining. And I mean, he was very good in the jungle and he won his camp food and he got to explain a bit about himself. And those are probably, if I'm trying to be really kind, the sort of silver lining to it all. But at the end of the day, you know, you're sort of on it to sort of raise your own profile and to make money. So I personally don't think that's something that MPs should do. And I'm more than happy for people to say, well, then your husband shouldn't have gone on Hunted. I'm happy to take that on the chin.
Yeah.
On balance, I'm happy. I can sleep at night over that one because we raised money for cancer. And I think he did a great job.
You are embarrassing yourself on TV to raise money for a charity that is important whilst raising issues. And I think that to me is why I would do something like that. It's got to be for the greater good.
Absolutely. And I think that if you go by that metric, then I don't think you can get it too far wrong. There is a part of me that actually does think that it's a good thing for people to see MPs as normal humans.
Yes.
So I think it does help feed into that narrative that, you know, look, they have a normal family and they live in a normal house and they're no different to anybody else and there's nothing special about us. We're just cracking on in a really bizarre job.
Yeah.
It did help for that. Or he could have been the villain for people. People could have been hoping that he got caught. So whether you loved him or hated him, a lot of people still tuned in to watch. And that's why the TV company probably chose an MP, because people will watch because either they want him to get caught or they don't want him to get caught. And with his skill set, they were like, oh, I really hope he gets caught because, you know, he was from the army. So that would be quite funny.
Yeah.
So we thought long and hard. It wasn't a callous decision. We did think long and hard about that. And he's good on telly. I think he comes across
well. He is.
Well.
But I know he's been even better on telly when he shaved his chest. So my husband is a cyclist who shaves his legs every summer. And sorry, Dermot, you're going to hate me for saying this. The first time he got into bed, he's like, oh, the sheets are really silky.
Yeah, I have, yeah, they're very similar. But you know, these army boys, they love to shave. They shave everything. They don't.
Do they?
Yeah, everything goes.
Really?
Yeah, maybe not armpit hair. We'll just leave that for swimmers. But yeah, everything goes.
I had no idea.
Oh yeah, no. So it's not a new phenomenon for him.
Oh my God. You see, with male cyclists, where do you stop shaving? Do you shave to the bottom of the cycling shorts or do you shave to boxing short levels or do you go up? And then just a whole myriad. Army men shave?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They love it. They call it their personal admin.
Nice.
If they're off to do the personal admin, then that's what they're doing. Yeah. And then so for the advert, you know, when he did the Dove advert, that was all all par for the course. And the great thing about it, he's not shy about anything. And that's what makes it nice, because his constituents can come in, make an appointment to see him, and they can literally talk about anything. I remember talking to a lady in Plymouth and she said, oh, yeah, I was so nervous because she'd had a mastectomy for breast cancer.
Yeah.
And she wanted to go and talk to Johnny about the provision in Derriford for having, you know, a reconstruction surgery. And she said, any other MP, she said, I would have been so nervous having to talk about my breasts or lack thereof. She said, but I just felt so comfortable talking to Johnny. He was lovely. And that's a really good thing when you're an MP, because you have to be a people's person. And I think a lot of people who go into this possibly don't realise that actually those people skills and the empathy that you need for people, because this is their lives, it's so important to them.
Yeah.
You know, and he grew up with sisters and literally nothing's off the table. He has now has three daughters. And he was, I actually overheard him talking about periods to my eldest daughter the other day. He's a hands-on.
Love it.
Millennial dad, I guess you call them now.
Love it. I've still got images of army men shaving and waxing in the middle of the desert and my mind is just blown.
Sorry.
Imac, wax or razors?
So he's not patient enough with the Imac thing. He's like, what do you mean I've got to wait for 5 minutes? I don't have 5 minutes.
Okay.
So, whereas women care about their regrowth, men don't care.
Or do they not?
No, I was like, you will get bushier chest if you keep shaving. I don't care. I'll just keep shaving it. So razors normally, whatever's quickest, that's the answer.
Whatever's quickest. Love this. Good to know. Now, one final thing. I know Johnny's spoken quite openly about his mental health.
Yes.
And that's obviously affected both you publicly and privately. And I've got a book coming out in the summer where I talk about my own suicidal depression that I never talked about as a doctor because I was terrified of what patients would think and what my colleagues would think.
Really?
And it's hard for people who love you who don't get mental health to know how to help, how to cope, how to support. What was it like for you being a partner of someone who's being so open about mental health?
Well, it's interesting actually because I've been doing it wrong. And I found that out this week. These last 6 weeks, I've been on a course which is designed for carers, more specifically parents, but spouses still works mm-hmm. with mental health, but specifically obsessive compulsive disorder, which is what Johnny had. So I've been doing it all wrong. So I'm thinking I'm a good spouse and I'll talk to him about his worries and let's talk about it. Because it was always about talk therapy. And he's done his CBT and I've done joint CBT with him and we've gone through a huge journey together. And I've just found this specialist and she and her husband, they are OCD sufferers themselves and they know their stuff and they've trained in the States and they're absolutely brilliant. And she said, no, because now what you're doing is you're validating these thoughts. These thoughts mean nothing. These compulsions mean nothing. This is the one area of mental health where talking about it's not helping. So we're going to try a new approach now, and I've had to flip my mind around. So when Johnny says to me, are you sure I turn the oven off? I'm like, well, you have to work it out for yourself. And I have
Interesting.
To take a really hardcore stance on it. But having said that, obviously talking about mental health is brilliant, because although what I'm talking about now is the sort of the detail of OCD, but when it comes to mental health on the whole, Johnny and I are a great team because he's very good at communicating and we tell each other everything. I mean, we have to have this sort of radical honesty policy when it comes to mental health. And I think that's the only way to do it. Don't just tell the good bits, the shiny bits, or the bits that are socially acceptable, you know, because a lot of OCD is intrusive thoughts, which can be, well, hilarious if you just laugh at them, because that's what we do. And you have to just be able to tell each other everything. And it doesn't even have to be yourself. I think you just need somebody in your life, whether it's sister, brother, mother, whatever, someone that you can just tell everything to, that loves you unconditionally. You can literally tell everything.
The person you won't say you're fine to.
Absolutely. Yeah, fine is not a word. I think with Johnny, when he was a boy, he was told that mental health issues didn't exist, that, you know, he was being ridiculous.
God, I guess in the army, that must have been perpetuated.
It was the army that saved him, actually. It was the army because
he really?
Was his mates. And it was his friends who said to him, mate, this isn't right. You shouldn't have to be checking this and checking that. And, you know, this isn't right. You know, the thing about OCD is he's a perfectionist. So for some things in the army, he was just brilliant at his kit, his admin, target, everything, brilliant. And it was his own personal struggles when it would come to light switches and taps and intrusive thoughts and, you know, things that didn't alter him as a professional, but, you know, it affected him as a person. And it was his military friends that said to him, you need to help. This isn't right. You know, he didn't realise he could get help, you know, because this was quite a long time.
Yeah.
And then his friends in pure military style made it funny. So he'd leave the room and then they would get all of his stuff and turn his room upside down. They go, there you are. No, because he liked it to be just so. There you are. They'd be like, fix it for you. That's the line. Fix it for you. And he just had to cope with that and he had to laugh at it. And he did laugh at it and then you know, threw them all out and put everything back to the way he wanted it. But that's the sort of level of support and community that he needed.
Yeah.
And then the military doctors, you know, really, really sorted him out and he got a diagnosis.
I guess if you'd lived alone, you weren't living in such close quarters with friends, you could hide it and no one would know. And it could have been buried for such a long time.
Of course. And that's the demon with anxiety and depression, is that a lot of the time you can hide it for people. And why suicide can be such a shock, because, you know, it happened to me when I was so very young, and there was someone in my life who I genuinely thought was the life and the soul of the party.
Yeah.
So to hear years later from his son, who got in touch with me to say that he'd sadly taken his own life, was such a shock, because he was obviously a master at covering it all up and trying to almost, I think it's a selfless thing, trying to save the people in your life from knowing. Yeah.
You don't want to hurt anybody. My husband had no idea I'd been thinking about ending my own life.
Wow, really?
And you want to protect them.
Of course you do. Because you know, you love these people and you don't want them to worry about you.
No.
It's human nature. But again, it can make us our own worst enemies, because it takes a long time to reach out for help. But almost being in the military, Johnny was forced to sort of confront it.
Yeah.
He couldn't have carried on with his job otherwise. There has to be very strict parameters about things like that. So it was faced, you know, he had to face it head on, and he did. And it's something that he's just learned to cope with and live with. But every now and then we'll do a refresher. But he likes to do things in the public. Like, he did a good interview with Alistair Campbell about his mental health.
Yeah, I saw.
And he says to me, the reason to do that, because as a politician, you know, when you do things in the media, everyone thinks that you do things in the media just because you love talking about yourself. But we always sit down and go, right, is there a reason for that? Is there a good reason to do that? And he said, when he was a little boy, if he'd been able to pick Men's Health off the shelf and read about the same things that he was suffering from, he said it would have been an absolute game changer for him, much, much earlier on. And we get emails from parents saying, oh, my lad's just, he wants to go in the military and he's read your stuff about mental health. And it serves a huge purpose by talking about it, really does. And he's really happy to, you know, he's not shy about anything, literally anything.
Yeah.
So
I think it's knowing you're not alone, that someone out there has been through what you've been through and they can help.
Yeah. And there's hope. There has to be everything, you know, the message of hope is what you can give people, really. What's very hard and what Johnny really struggles with is that he has this sort of burden of responsibility, especially when he does have OCD, is that responsibility is a big trigger. He feels very responsible. And a lot of times that's what leads to your OCD, is, you know, locking up the house at night because you know you're protecting your children. And that can take longer than it would with most people. So he has this huge burden of responsibility that he feels now for the people of Plymouth and for veterans, you know, veterans nationwide. And for him, that is such a huge burden to take on. And that is why every now and then I'm like, right, you know, take him. He's actually going to go on a course soon to do some refreshing, just to keep himself.
Yeah.
Because then he will then work better for everybody else.
Yeah. And is it hard for you to fit in with all that responsibility he has? I go, as a surgeon, work can be completely overwhelming. You think, well, where do my family fit in when it's all about the patients that I need to help?
Yeah.
Finding that balance can be so hard when you have a public job.
Yeah, and I think...
Do you have to knock him down a bit like you do on Twitter? Come on now, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, but you know, that's just a normal life thing, isn't it? But yeah, I think because we went into this together and we've always done it together, it's not, you know, I don't mind it when it's all work talk or, you know, we've accepted that that's just the way it's going to be. And it's the only way to do it, because we are sharing the workload as well. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things that he does that I can't do because, you know, I haven't been elected for anything. But even being a sounding board, that he can say, am I doing the right thing? What do you think about this? It really helps. And it just shares that sort of that burden.
Yeah.
You know, and even just the children have grown up. To them, it's the norm now. It is what daddy does. And they've just adapted, because that's what children do. They're amazing. But then also, I'll put my foot down and say, right, Sunday night, family film time, ice cream, pizza, Netflix. No work talk, no more homework.
No phones. We have a screen-free Sunday.
No more phones. Yeah. Or we just play Cluedo. We love Cluedo. Johnny does cheat a lot.
Oh, old school.
Yeah.
Does he cheat?
Oh, yes.
How can you cheat at Cluedo?
You can't really cheat in Cluedo, but we still think he does, because he pretends he doesn't understand the rules and then wins. Oh, it's so annoying.
Ah, okay. Annoying. I love that, though. It is that time for the family, isn't it, that's important.
Exactly. And we're a really close family. You know, I think out of anyone in the world, I would always choose to spend time with my girls and Johnny. And I think that support's really helped in politics. And I mean, I've had other MPs come up to me and say, oh, my wife's not really on board, or my husband's not really on board, and I'm finding it really hard. And it puts a huge strain on their relationship, huge strain. It's almost like you do all have to sign up for it. And I'm imagining you find there's perks that both you and your husband do the same job as well.
No, definitely.
Because you at least understand each other in that space.
It used to be, we've both had a really bad day with patients dying, but whoever gets to talk about it first gets the support of the other. It's like, no, but I've had a bad day too.
Yeah, it's a balance. It's a balance like anything. But I'm very glad I'm doing this with him. I would not want him to be struggling on his own with it all. It's a huge responsibility. Yeah. But, you know, but like jobs, like your job, you know, you literally have people's life and death in your hands. I mean, we all have to live with that level of responsibility that we've taken on. But, you know, going back to Twitter, that layer of abuse, it's so unnecessary.
It is. And I think it's hard to swipe people away when you are in the public eye, because someone will say, oh, she said that to them. And I love that you've just risen above and say, yeah, no, I'm going to treat them like a child.
Yeah. And I can say it because I haven't been elected.
No.
I don't have that line that I feel like I can't cross. Yeah, I'm happy to keep jumping over it. Happy days.
And it's working.
Yes, because I think somebody needs to say it. I think a lot of spouses of MPs would always, oh no, you know, I can't get involved. It's unprofessional. And maybe it is unprofessional. You know, I'm happy for that. You to level that at me. I don't mind, because I genuinely think that people need to understand that this is the level of abuse that we get.
Yeah. It's not right to say the stuff that people do, is it?
No.
Now, before I could talk to you for hours, Felicity, but before I let you go, I've got one more question.
Okay.
I've got a jar of joy for my listeners, and every week I ask them to tell me something that's made them smile so I can add it to the jar. And it's your turn. What's brought you joy this week?
This weekend, my oldest daughter brought me so much joy. It was the best Mother's Day ever, because I could have gone, oh, it's Mother's Day weekend and I'm stuck poolside again. But my eldest daughter is 14, so she's just the most gorgeous teenager. I'm so lucky. But she's gone on a real journey with her swimming, and it's been very tough. And she's had different coaches here, different coaches there. And she was starting to lose the love of it. And I was thinking, oh, because it defines her. She says, I love swimming. I am a swimmer. That's who I am. It's part of who I am. And she was starting to lose the love of it through no one else's fault. And it was just... And then suddenly she had the most amazing weekend. And the joy that was just radiating off her, it was almost visible. It was like a colour. And it just, honestly, I had to stop myself actually crying. And what am I doing? I'm crying over a swimming race. But it was just the joy that she found in her sport again. And I'm not a pushy mother. I'm amazed that I've produced someone who's actually that talented at something. you know, because I'm not. Eating and sleeping, probably in my 40s. And Twitter. It just brought me so much joy. So my children, they just make me so happy.
That is definitely going in the jar. Thank you so much, Felicity, for talking to us today. It's been brilliant.
Thanks for having me. Lovely to chat.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of Don't Ignore the Elephant. And it's really made me think. Now, I've had a bit of abuse online, both Twitter and Instagram, but it's nothing compared to what Felicity has been through. And whereas I used to respond with anger, I love how she's turned that into humour. And if you don't already follow her on Twitter, you should. The details will be in the show notes. I guarantee that she'll make you smile. Maybe even something for the jar of joy this week. I think we all should be using social media as a force for good. And I'd love to know if she's changed your mind about how to tackle things online. I also want to touch on the abuse that politicians and their families get, both online and in person. I was horrified when I heard about that nappy story. I think because politics seems so black and white at the moment, it's really easy to see how those feelings carry over into politicians' personal life. And the same must go for anyone in the public eye. It's why I try to keep my family out of any articles I write, although Mum was different, as you heard in episode one. What do you think we can do to make the online world a safer space? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Meanwhile, the knitted elephants are gathering speed and I'm loving all the photos. It looks like Rachel Bayliss is on her way to making a herd. And I've been blown away by the lovely comments from Jazz's episode. So many people say they need a Tarquin in their life. Reraveling on Instagram said it was just what she needed to hear to remind her that she is special. Emma Woolley said it was bloody brilliant, and Lisa Shimon said it was like Jazz was reading our minds, and I couldn't agree more. The jar of joy is nearly half full. Shirley Ledley told us that her grandson said Nana for the first time. Aww. And Jill Mayhew was walking along the seafront at high tide when a wave soaked her and she loved it. Mine was getting back in the river again for a dip in the rain, and I know Felicity would approve. What's yours been? Next week, I'm going to be speaking to Maggie Hope all about therapy. She's a psychotherapist and counsellor, and I get pretty personal about my own experience of CBT. We chat about who needs it, what it's like, and how to get rid of the stigma surrounding it. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe and leave a review. I love knowing that the podcast is really making a difference. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.